Okay, hello again. This is season two, I guess, of Mostly Hairless Apes. I'm Dr. Gene Mesko, talking to you from the Church of Science about Mostly Hairless Apes. I just had a lovely holiday. Haven't been on the air for a few weeks, but I also was not at work. I went to spring break. I'm a college professor. I got to take spring break. It was pretty great. I was recreational. Got to see a friend. I got to go down to the Florida Keys, stay with a friend, and just enjoyed myself. Kayaked a little, rode my bike, got in the water. Just a lovely time. And I worked on this stuff, talking about science and evolution and an evolutionary worldview. And I thought about the importance of recreation, because that's really what we all want. That's the beauty of the American dream. If we're going to build a society, I think including the whole idea of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness should be in there. That would definitely be a far goal. And the pursuit of happiness, I think, really involves recreation. We should all have some free time. And if we're just grinding, through life, it's not much of a life. It's hard. Life is hard. Yeah, you got to work. I appreciate that. But I think the beauty of our technological age is that we have carved out some time for individual pursuits, to pursue happiness, the thing that makes you happy. How do you make things that are more useful or beautiful in the world? That's the goal of a civilized human, is to work towards those things. And work should be meaningful. That's the idea here. Meaningful work, excuse me. Means that we should have significant impact on what we're doing and how we're earning our way. It actually really not much fun to do what you're told, to do what somebody else wants you to do, working for a living. That's what we're all doing. And I'm here to change that because I think we could have a little rebellion. I've got more details to follow. But right now we're talking about it as the 1% revolution, and it's that 1% at the top. Occupy Wall Street people weren't wrong. There's a problem. There's a problem with the whole ownership thing. From an evolutionary perspective, I'm looking at it from the long-term picture. How did we get to the point where a relatively small percentage of the population owns the majority of the capital in the world? And we've decided on capitalism as our economic system. And I think everybody likes that. Everybody likes getting paid what you're worth. There should be some proportion relative to what you're worth and what effort you put in and what skill and talent you have. And you should get paid for that. I think everybody agrees with that. At the same time, there are people starving in America, in the U.S., the richest country on the planet, supposedly. There's people who are homeless, and people say there's all sorts of issues. Well, what are the issues? What the issues are, they don't want to do meaningless work. We can carve out all sorts of stuff. But what if we actually had a society where work was significant, where work was something that we agreed, wow, that's a really valuable job. That needs to get done. And because that needs to get done, we should pay somebody to do it and do it well. As opposed to what do we have right now? Today we have an economy that's evolved out of Western autocracies, imperialism, really colonialism. I think if I was going to classify the big picture historically where we are right now, we are transitioning out of colonialism. From an evolutionary perspective, nothing happens fast. Things don't occur rapidly in that sense. For natural selection, it's the lifespan of the organisms. It's the lifespans of, because natural selection says DNA mutates and produces new variables in a population. Some individuals survive and reproduce better than others. And the distribution of genetic variables changes over generations. That's natural selection. We've got a pretty good handle on that in the biological sciences. We don't understand much about artificial selection, because that means trying to understand how people think. How do people think about stuff? We've been doing it for 50,000 years. That's the minimum age for consciousness. And it's changed. We've obviously gone through major renovations. And if you look at it evolutionarily, you can ask, well, we were thinking about stuff, and when did it change? Well, the first big change would have been 10,000 years ago, when we got civilized. We got civilized by stopping our wandering. We stopped wandering around as hunter-gatherers, following the herds, picking up whatever we could. We settled in and we started to grow crops and herds. We started farming. We did agriculture. What did that mean for humanity? Well, it was a trade-off. We traded some of our flexibility for some stability. We changed the opportunities to migrate wherever the food and hunt and game may take us, and our interests to standardizing a place to raise enough food to feed a bunch of people and to do it on a regular basis. And stability versus flexibility is a pretty constant trade-off. It's matter and energy at work. I mean, that's when you look at it scientifically, matter and energy, space and time are the big variables. That's the edge of our knowledge down at the edge of the layer of physics. We know coming up through biology and chemistry, matter and energy work to produce living organisms. We call it metabolism. But living organisms stay alive, they resist entropy, and they use their information, their biochemical information in things like DNA, to organize their bodies and their cells and their molecules and to let them run in autocatalytic cycles, cycles that allow them to replicate themselves and maintain stability over time. And that was evolution for billions of years until consciousness came along. We don't know what consciousness is. We just know and we assume everybody that's human has it, has the potential for it. And people grow up and they become adults and citizens in societies, and they work to keep that society going. They become members of that society. But just like multicellular organisms can have cells that revolt, and they might become cancerous and start and grow a tumor inside the body of the larger organism, individual citizens can revolt in a given civilization. And they can say, F off. They can say, fuck you, and go off and do other things. And they don't want to participate because the society doesn't mean anything. And that's, unfortunately, what Charles Darwin did almost 150 years ago, 1858. Going on 200 years of evolution, and he blew up the paradigm. He blew up the civilization paradigm. Because how did we get everybody to agree to be civilized, to stop wandering around? Well, I mean, yeah, agriculture was a good tease. But the offer of regular food could be pretty enticing. But one of the hallmarks we use for civilization is some of the landmarks, some of the buildings that started. We noticed people started staying in one place and putting stuff together. And the oldest things that we built seemed to be some sorts of temples. Everybody knows about Stonehenge. There's a slightly older complex over in Ireland called Newgrange. I would imagine that, yeah, there's the temples in the pyramids in Egypt. There's a variety of ancient structures. The oldest one I know about is one called Göbekli Tepe in Turkey. I think I pronounced that right. And Göbekli Tepe is this 10,000, 11,000-year-old arrangement of stones. It's a little similar to Stonehenge. It's bigger, apparently. I've never been, read about it. And it was one of the first recorded civilizations where, at least for parts of the year, people were permanently residing around this structure. They found lots of houses and lots of artifacts, different tools that the humans have been making for thousands of years. Going back to Homo habilis, handyman in the evolutionary record. We've been making tools, improving our life by using our brains to figure out how to solve problems. And arguably, the hunter-gatherer citizens had civilization. Whatever the rules on the road were, I'm sure there were elders. They were probably tribal in the sense of a variety of accepted patterns. But when we started building these temples, at the very least, you have to believe there was something about a belief system there. There was something about deities. And that's one of the other things I think that we gave up. So I've got my three variables, as I've explained previously, for social adaptations. That a civilization primarily works with three social adaptations. Those social adaptations are belief systems, governments, and economies. Belief systems tell us what's right and wrong. They give us our standards. Economies decide how we distribute resources. Governments make up the rules of how we should behave with each other and with the world around us. And there's an infinite number of civilizations. As if humans can form civilizations with each other, then any combination is technically a unique civilization. That's why when somebody walks in the room, sometimes it changes the feel of the group, or when somebody leaves. Because on that personal level, each person brings something unique to the group, and that's what we need to celebrate. That's the thing we need to understand about humanity. We're all unique individual members of our species. We're all going to die. But while we're alive, we each make a unique contribution to life. It may or may not be significant. It may or may not last. Obviously, we have record books and history books for a reason, because we like to take note of significance. We understand certain things are more important than others. But we're all moving that pathway. And that's what anybody wants. That's really what pursuit of happiness is. Happiness is to be noted. Happiness is to say, I'm part of the group. I'm doing good. I'm happy. And I get joy from doing this thing. And giving joy is fun, too. Making other people happy. Being accomplished. But that's also answering questions. There's all sorts of ways we can contribute. Helping out each other, building things, making things, beautiful, making things useful. Lots of ways we can help each other out, because that's why we're evolving social primates. We've evolved together in our troops and tribes and clans and grown out of our families and grow up and into these civilizations where we embrace different belief systems, different economies, different governments. And the first ones probably were mostly about belief systems. Somebody said they got a better idea how this could work. We can understand the stars, we can watch, and it's probably why Stonehenge and Göbekli Tepe and all these places have an astronomical component. Because they figured out patterns. We figured out some consistencies. That's what life does. Life figures out patterns that work. That's how you resist entropy. You don't go off randomly. Entropy is randomness. Life is ordered. Life organizes things. It has to. That's the only way you can resist entropy. That's our understanding in physics. That's where life sits right now. That's the one we're going to work with. That's the best probability of being correct relative to whatever the real world is. But what did we give up? What were the early religions, and what did we transition to when we started doing agriculture? Well, we probably went from animism, where we thought everybody had a unique life energy. Everything was infused with the force. Everything had power. Because it disappeared. The power went away when somebody died. We could see that. We could observe that. But then what happened? After the power went away, they were dead. And somebody suggested it. Somebody along the way externalized gods. That's what we did to become agricultural. We looked at the stars. We said, oh, there's these patterns to the weather. There's a climate we can observe. The rains are going to come a few months from now when these stars are over there. And that's what they figured out. And that changed the perspective of the belief system. It took the power of holiness, of reverential life, out of individuals, and it created a new one outside of us. It gave a body to the universe. And we eventually transitioned away from that. Once we put God outside of ourselves, after we said, oh, there's not just a spirit inside of us, there's something else. Maybe those things out there are personal deities. And that's how we built pantheons. And you go back in time and you look at all the old religions, all those good old time religions. People built pantheons. There were all the Egyptians, all the Greeks. You can go out to India, to China. You can look through Africa and Europe. There were lots of different deities, thunder gods and lightning gods and brewery gods and vintage gods and gods of knowledge and gods of war. All sorts of gods in the different pantheons, in those different civilizations. because they didn't know. We were learning. We were learning how to be civilized. We were experimenting. That's all life is. It's a grand experiment. And civilizations are different experiments where we assemble a given belief system with a given economy and a given government, and we go about our business, and you either survive or you don't. And many civilizations have fallen by the wayside. And where are we now? I'm sitting here in 2024 in America, in the United States of America, looking at this long history, and I'm thinking, how the hell did we get here? Well, we changed a few other things along the way. The religion thing worked for a long time. Why did the religion thing work for a long time as the belief system? Because we didn't know. We have ignorance. And that's, in that sense, it's similar to science. It's why I classify science as a belief system. Because they all start from ignorance. They all say, we don't have enough information. Somebody must have more information. And religions tell us that the gods have the information. Different gods have different information. And if we do the right thing, we can access that information. If we repeat rituals. Yeah, that's why we no longer have brewmaster gods, though. We used to have brewing gods. Because we've been making beer for thousands of years. You push stones up a hill to make Stonehenge. At the end of the day, you're going to want a cold frosty. Or a warm frosty, whatever it was at the time. Probably didn't have a lot of ice. At least not on demand. And they made beer, though, and they partied. They had a good time, I'm sure. I'm sure it was an amazing festival when they put Stonehenge together. And they put Newgrange, and they put the pyramids together. Somebody was celebrating. Because that's a major achievement, to finish one of those structures by hand with manual labor. Might not have been theirs, could have been slaves. Probably was slaves in some cases. But a lot of the early ones were probably voluntary. People willingly did that, dragged stones across valleys and riverbeds and uphills and downhills to get from quarries to these sites that had special significance for whatever reason, and built stuff. And they did it willingly and happily because they were a civilization. And they hung around for hundreds of years, maybe thousands, depending on which ones we're talking about. But I think they probably burned out too, because it's probably related to charismatic leaders. Because on the government side, throughout most of our history, in terms of the agricultural revolution, we've been dealing with monarchies. We're dealing with autocratic rulers, usually related by blood, who are the ones in charge. They're the ones making the rules, telling us what we should do. And good or bad, I think that pathway wears out over time. I think people get tired of the same components and there's not enough change. And that's why eventually we shifted to democracy and everybody thought, oh, I want to have a say in this. And we got away from monarchies. That's what the 20th century was about. 20th century was about changing the government systems, getting away from the monarchies. Because we found out we actually had some capital we could work with. That's where the economic system changed. We used to have barter systems. We had barter systems that evolved into mercantile systems where the state produced coinage. And the coinage was put out and backed by the state and said it was worth something. And people traded and sold and stole and did all these things with money. Because money was backed by a given government. And they said, this is worthwhile. This is good stuff. You can use that. And everybody said, that's great. I don't have to haul all my stuff to market. I can just carry my gold or my silver or whatever it was. And so we traded. We figured out cash economies. And we built up capital. And we ended up with this interesting system called capitalism. Because what happened with the religion system, before it changed, as the religious systems evolved with the monarchy systems and the cash systems evolved, we built up a whole world. And about 500 years ago, for whatever reason, Western Europe seemed to surge ahead a little bit. I think it was chimneys. That seems a little odd, but here's my take. Chimneys allowed you to live inside in a northern climate when you had significant winter. I mean, think about living outside. Think about hunter-gatherers. Think about migrating. Think about building structures. But living in nicer climates. The places where you don't have to worry about freezing your ass off in the winter. Where you can stay alive. But at some point, people got pushed out to the edges. Or they explored the edges. And they waited out winter. And they learned how to survive winter. And how to survive winter involves staying warm and having enough food stored. So you got to plan, you got to think. And people planned and thought and stored food and made warm clothes. And somebody figured out how to make fires inside. Once we figured out how to make fires inside, then we could move into winter climates and we had time to think. We could hunker down for the winter. We could evolve different festivals. But we stored our stuff and we had time to work stuff out. And that's really what we have today as the best things for pursuit of happiness, if you think about it. I don't know about you, but I'm happiest when I'm working on something that I want to do, when I'm in my garden, when I'm in my workshop, when I'm sitting at my computer writing down ideas. To me, that's the best time. That's the time. It's my time. It's my pursuit of happiness. I'm doing the things that I think are important and using my resources to do those. How did I get to those? I had to go climb the ladder like everybody else. I had to go to school, had to work, had to do stuff. Coming up on retirement, and I just can't wait. Because recreation time, where I started all this, is where we want to go. We'd love to have pursuit of happiness all the time. But you got to have life and liberty. So you got to have enough of an economy that functions, that distributes resources, so I don't have to farm everything myself. I really don't want to thresh the wheat or butcher the cow. I'll do it if it has to be done. As I'm civilized, and if you're civilized, you would do it too. We all know there's work that has to be done, but that's what changed with science, with Western Europe. We started to break apart the religious monopoly with the Protestant Reformation. Then we started to break apart the ideological ideas with the Enlightenment and the Scientific Revolution. Because we were making up things, we were figuring out things with science, and we were figuring out biology, and we still had religions, and we still had kings, and we still had economies with cash, and the people, there was a small group in charge, the autocrats, and it all started to bubble over in the 20th century. Darwin contributed a seed in 1860 when he threw out On the Origin of Species, and that change of saying, well, wait a minute, maybe there aren't any gods. Maybe this is just a natural process of living systems changing over time. Part of it was the evidence from the Industrial Revolution, because what did we need to run the Industrial Revolution? We needed energy to run all those machines that were all doing all the work-saving devices that we make. We needed fossil fuels. And guess what fossil fuels have in them? They have fossils. They have remnants of old life. And people started digging out coal and doing mines to get minerals to do smelting and make more machines as we came up with all these great ideas. And we were building scientific technology. And in the process, we noticed all these old living forms. And we started to push our dates way back. We no longer just relied on the Bible saying that the earth was formed in 4004 BC, according to Bishop Usher. You can look that one up if you want. And we started to extend the lifespan. And if you had enough time, slow changes could amount to something. And you could get the origin of species and new species like humans over the course of hundreds of thousands and millions of years. And eventually that's where we are. So right now we have this model of evolution on Earth, that Earth is 4.5 billion years old. Life's been here for 3.5 billion. Animals, multicellular animals have been here starting a little less than a billion years ago. Vertebrates, animals with backbones, started around 500 million years ago, 500 million years. And that started out as fishes, and then they became amphibians, and some of them became reptiles, and some of them became mammals. And some of the mammals became primates. They evolved opposable thumbs that they could use. And then some of those primates started to get smarter. And some of them became us. And we're evolving social primates who are mostly hairless apes. And then we figured out consciousness. We adapted consciousness. And we started building civilizations. But because we were thinking about stuff, we were using mental information and not just genetic biochemical information. We started to do artificial selection. Whatever ideas we came up with, we could use and we could alter the environment. 20,000 years ago, somebody said, I want a puppy. And we made dogs. 10,000 years ago, we figured out agriculture. And we've been adding animals. We've had, you know, somebody figured out how to domesticate cattle thousands of years ago. About 3,000 years ago, I think we domesticated chickens. You know, we've been doing all this stuff, and we've been getting better food, growing better civilizations, but it's mostly been dominated by monarchies. We had somebody at the top who were usually the best families. We realized biology was important on some level, and we followed the rules of the rulers. They were probably a little better looking, probably a little smarter, a little stronger. And we said, yeah, they should be the leaders. And if they were good leaders, civilization thrived. If they were crappy leaders, those civilizations eventually go extinct. That's the bottom line. Civilizations only last if they're functional, because living systems only last if they're functional. And civilizations are just an extension of living organisms. They're animal societies that include consciousness. Because we have, animals have societies. The wildebeests have society. Ants have societies. We study those in sociobiology. But civilization is the key. And civilization involves ideas. We got to have ideas about how to stay alive. And when we stay alive, we can change things. And that's what we want to do. We want to get to the point where we have more recreational time. That's why we had the Industrial Revolution. That's why we threw out the autocrats back in the 20th century. That's what World War I and World War II and the Cold War were all about. They were saying, we don't want kings anymore. We don't want czars. We don't want these guys. We want to get rid of them. We don't want dictators. We got rid of Hitler. We don't want somebody who can just say, these people should all die. We want democracy. We decided democracy is the best way, that everybody gets a say. But what happened in the 80s? We won. We finally knocked off the communists. We said capitalism is our economic system. We want democracy. We want capitalism. And we want freedom of religion. That's the American model. We acknowledge religion is important. And that's unfortunately where we messed up. Because we have to believe in something. We have to believe in the evolution of organisms. And then we say, well, where did the rules come from then? Where's the authority? We don't have all the answers. But science gives us better answers than religion does right now. Science tells us the facts about things. And when we look at the modern world, we could say, well, what happened over the last 100 years? Well, we got rid of the kings, so we put the people in charge. Well, people are stupid. We make mistakes. And we have a very inefficient economy, especially in or a very inefficient government, because it's democracy and we want to let everybody talk. But what's more efficient than a democracy is a capitalist economy. Money drives changes a lot faster. And that's what we did in the 80s. We got rid of the communists. We won the Cold War. And we had a whole bunch of people come in charge who were capitalists and said, oh, we should let capitalism determine everything. And that's one interesting view of life. It's one way to run civilization. It's what we've been doing for the last 50 years. You know, that's 40 years since we're in the 2020s. Since we've been doing it since the Soviet Union fell apart in the 80s. And we outspent them. We were able to outspend them because capitalism is a better economy than centralized communist economies. It's more efficient. It works better. So how do we work a capitalist economy with a democratic government? That's what we're going to have to do next time. So talk to you soon.